Caden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and it is time to connect to success. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Success is very personal. It's all about hope, imagination, resilience, and being open to what is possible. In the end, it is what you decide is most important to you. During today's program, we will explore connecting to success by reading about how others have been able to connect with their personal definition of success. Today is a reading from an article. The article is titled Preparing Students Who Are Blind or Visually Impaired for Success in College. It is the text of a presentation from a representative of Learning Ally, formerly known as Reading for the Blind. It consists of the speaker, Mary Alexander, and a narrator, unidentified, who describes the photographs that appear on the screen as she was giving her presentation. Alexander. In 1948, a wonderful woman named Anne McDonald was watching World War II veterans return. They had, probably, what we would call traumatic brain injury today, but they had a lot of vision loss, and they were not able to access the GI Bill to educate themselves so they could feed themselves and their families, and it was a real problem. Being in New York City, I think she probably saw more than many other people would, so she decided to do something. And on the top floor of the New York City Public Library, she started recording books that they needed in school. When I read that story, I just got goosebumps because there was a woman who had no connection to blindness other than she saw a need and she filled it. Narrator. We see a photograph of Anne McDonald along with an image of a soundscriber, a device that would record onto vinyl disc to be played back on a record player. This is the device that Anne McDonald and the other volunteers would read into. Alexander. So from that point, we grew into an organization that had studios all across the country and many, many, many dedicated volunteers. In the 1990s, we saw people that weren't blind were starting to want to use our books. There were students that also had a need, but they had no vision impairment. But they did have a learning difference or a learning disability. Because that group kept growing and growing and growing, we expanded who we served, and our name at that point became Reading for the Blind and Dyslexic. We increased some types of books that we would record at that point. We added more and more of the early childhood books, as well as college textbooks, the high school textbooks. We made a very deliberate attempt to serve as many of those types of students as we could. Narrator. We see and hear a video clip of volunteers recording several different books that will be included in the organization's library and available to people with a variety of disabilities that make it difficult for them to access printed material. Alexander. First, with families whose students had learning disabilities, but also with families that have students that have vision impairment. Students need more than just an audiobook, and we want to support students holistically. We want to support the student with the resources that they need to help them thrive in their education. So we made the decision a few years ago to change our name to Learning Ally because we feel like we can be more than an audiobook provider. So while we still serve the same people and the same types of learning differences, we want to be able to provide services for the whole student rather than just the audiobook content. The way that Learning Ally likes to determine where there is a need is to use research. We have a lot of specialists who have been with us for a very long time, and we all have our own experiences and our own ideas about what students need. And as well intentioned as we all may be, we really do want to use research to be sure that we are providing a need that is truly out there. So, through research funded for college students that are blind or visually impaired, the Lavelle Fund for the Blind gave us the ability to do some research. For college students who are blind or visually impaired, the research showed that they are not arriving on campus as they prepared as they need to be. And there are several different areas that there are some real deficits in with most college students who are blind. While our research was based only on a small number of students in a certain geographical area, the prototype calls that we have done on our program since then have really borne this out. After the research, the insights, the extra calls with students who are blind and visually impaired, we have pulled together what we consider five areas, or inside what we actually have called the five pillars of success. We're pretty sure there are no other resources out there like this, and we want to be able to instill success for these students early on in their college career. The five pillars consist of managing your professor, so learning how to advocate for yourself, self-determination skills, but it's all the resources you would need to manage your educational experience. Narrator, we see a graphic depicting the first pillar. An orange rectangular column with the resources you would need to manage your educational experience with the title, Managing Your Professor. And these descriptive phrases help with advocacy, maintaining assertiveness, and developing empathy. Alexander, becoming a part of your community so isolation is not an issue for you so that you can be part of the classroom, you can also hopefully have a great social experience. So we're building some pretty cool things around that as well. Narrator, we see a graphic depicting the second pillar, a green rectangular column with the heading, Becoming a Part of the Community. And these descriptive phrases help our learners connect with students, find networks both on and off campus. Alexander, there are a lot of existing resources on college campuses, but you have to know how to leverage them. How do you manage the Disability Services Office? How do you manage maybe some of the accessibility tools that you already have with the Disability Service Office? You know, there are a lot of things going on there, so we've pulled together some very good tools around that. Narrator, we see a graphic depicting the third pillar. A blue rectangular column with the heading, Leveraging the DSO, or Disability Services Office, and this descriptive sentence, Know your legal rights while developing the skills needed to manage formal resources. Alexander, knowing and having knowledge of learning effectively, how do I learn? How do I need to communicate that, or how much of that do I need to communicate to anybody on campus? And when do I need to use my strategic independence? So, when do I need to do it myself, and when do I need to ask others for help? Narrator, we see a graphic depicting the fourth pillar. It's a gray rectangular column with the heading, Learning Effectively, and this descriptive sentence, Understand how your visual acuity affects how you learn so you can become strategically independent. Alexander, probably one of the key things is making the technology work for you. As we know, there's not a lot of training. Once you get to college, there's not time for training. You need to know how to use the tools that you have, whether they're low-tech or high-tech, and how they can best serve you. Narrator, we see a graphic depicting the fifth pillar, a light blue rectangular column with the heading, Making Technology Work for You, and this descriptive sentence, Help with the ways to discover and employ technology for effective learning. Alexander, pillar number one, managing your professor. Students are very often reluctant to engage the professor, and it goes back to advocacy skills and being able to talk about your disability. If you're not comfortable with that, you are most likely not going to approach your professor or the teaching assistant and say, this was not clear to me, or the professor put something up on the whiteboard that I need access to. Being able to ask for that and to advocate for yourself becomes much, much harder if your advocacy skills are lacking or you're just a shy person in general. Not everyone is an extrovert, so those are very much learned skills, and students need to arrive at college having already flexed those muscles, having already exercised that ability, because it's not going to grow up overnight in college. So if they are not able to speak about who they are, how they learn, and what they need, then it's going to be very challenging as an experience for them. Narrator. A photograph shows a classroom with several students writing notes as a professor stands next to a chalkboard at the front of the room. The professor's handwriting makes it a challenge for a person with normal vision to read. Alexander. The faculty engagement with students with vision impairments is different everywhere. You cannot say it's bad or you can't say it's great because it's different and it's very individualistic and it depends upon the professor or the faculty member. But very often people are not used to dealing with people with vision impairments. It's a low incidence disability, and if they have never interacted with someone who is either low vision or blind, they may be nervous about that. So the student's ability to put them at ease would go a long way in how successful the interaction is going to be. Pillar number two, becoming part of the community. One of the first and one of the key things that a college student is not prepared to do is to really engage in the classroom in the same way that his sighted peers do. The marginalization of our students from a college classroom experience, you know, that experience is one of the key places that you interact with students. You interact with your professor. It's so important. But because of various things, they don't interact the same way, and they tend to isolate themselves, or the instructor or the college isolates them. That's a very key finding that creates a sense of being outside of your peer circle and not fully interacting and not participating, you know, in their instruction. Narrator. A photograph shows two computer workstations set up in a hallway outside of a college disability services office. Above each workstation is a sign that reads, "Attention, this computer is reserved for people with disabilities. Please be considerate." The words "attention" and "disabilities" are in large red print. For students who choose not to disclose their learning differences to peers and or instructors, the public location and the sign which identifies any user as a person with disabilities might make the workstations a resource they would rather avoid rather than utilize. Alexander. I have a son who is visually impaired, who is in his first year of college, and I see this happening to him, but it's because of choices that he has made. So we had a conversation around it, and he just did not have an awareness that that's what he was doing. The research showed that, for instance, because of some of their technology that they use, maybe a Braille note taker or a monocular to be able to see the classroom board a little bit better, a student will purposely isolate themselves from other students within the room. They will sit completely separate from them. One young lady in our research study, she's low vision, but she hasn't really self-identified as a low vision student. She refuses to sit at the front of the classroom because she just feels like if she does things that are going to help her succeed, they will just brand her as being different. Narrator. In a photograph, we see the young woman that Mary Alexander was referring to. Her face has been intentionally obscured. In the photo, she is studying at a table in her home. She uses a slant board for her textbook to provide assistance in accessing the print. In addition, we see her open a laptop with a large-scale graphics on the screen. These are accommodations she resists using in public. Alexander. One of the reasons students are marginalizing themselves is that lack of self-determination skills. Being able to say that this is my vision impairment, this is what it means in my education, and this is what it means as far as how I need to manage the people around me. So it's very, very big piece to expect an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old student to walk into the door knowing how to do so. That's a big challenge, to do the amount of studying that's required and prep for your studying and then try to have a social life on top of that. We talked to several students who felt isolated because of it, but also because they had chosen to live in a single dorm room rather than living with a roommate. Their technology might be loud, their screen reader might bother some, or they're working on either a Perkins Brailler or a Braille note taker of some kind, and they don't want to bother someone. Very often the college will make the decision for them and say, "Students with disabilities, we put you in a single." Well, right away, that's one of the key places that you make a new friend. Some students are also deliberately steered towards online classes, and if you are in an online class, the interaction with your peers is very limited. That could be a good choice for one of your classes, but it's very isolating if all of your interactions with the school are online. And then the other piece is, because they have a vision impairment, you know, when you're walking around campus, they may not have an awareness of what the social opportunities are. Very often, those are things that are posted on bulletin boards, or that there are young people around campus that are handing out flyers, but they just don't know that they're out there. And so, they very often do not have those opportunities. We have one young lady that we've made calls to recently joining a sorority, and she's finding a lot of fulfillment because she has joined a very specific social club, for lack of a better word. It's a group that she feels a lot of camaraderie with because it's a sorority around education, and it's just worked out so well for her. She probably is the student that I've spoken with recently that feels the most social engagement with her community and with her campus. I think that's a really good thing to take away from it, that you have to find a specific social engagement area or place or club and try to become involved with that. Pillar number three is leveraging the Disability Services Office. We don't think about every day that we manage people around us. I really had never thought about this, but the research showed that a student that is visually impaired has to manage a network of people that is much larger than their sighted peers. For instance, they need to, because of the law that directs disability services in the college experience, called the ADA or Americans with Disabilities Act, that's the only law that is in place right now, and it allows for certain accommodations for students. But unlike IDEA, which governs students in the K through 12 or secondary education experience, it is not proactive. So the students have to become the ones who initiate all of these accommodations. So if they don't learn how to manage the Disability Services Office, or they don't learn how to speak with and manage their professor, they can't learn what the professor expects from them and then be able to turn around and give that back. Very often, colleges might want to provide human note takers for students in a class where there is a lot of visual stuff going on the board or on the whiteboard. Those kinds of human interactions are really that is a sophisticated interaction between two young people that have no experience with it. So just learning to manage all those networks around them is just really key in getting through at least that first year of college. Because after the first year, you're probably intuitively understanding what you need to do. But that very first semester, it can be very challenging. And in our research, we did see a couple of students not return after the first semester. And those were key reasons for both of these students: lack of self-identification of their vision impairment, but also the management piece. Let's now go to pillar number four, learning effectively. These students are so focused on when they get their assignments in class, the amount of time they have to spend in their rooms, heads down, just getting prepared to study. Oof. The prep time for study is unbelievable. Let's say that your professor puts up on the blackboard or Canvas or whatever student management tool is that your university uses, PDFs primarily, and you're supposed to be able to download them. Well, to do that, students are going to have to, first of all, be able to download documents off of a tool like that. Hopefully that tool is accessible to whatever screen reader or note taker that they use, and then manage to get it into an accessible format, because not all PDFs are accessible. The thought or the feeling in the college world is, well, we've made all this digital, but they don't understand the digital that is not always accessible. So just the prep work that they have to get through to get things ready for them to study, and if they don't use a human note taker, getting those notes. They don't show up magically right after class, so the time that it takes to get the notes, to make sure you understand the notes, and maybe after a back and forth a little bit with your note taker to be sure that you're getting the key points on this. Narrator: a photograph shows a page in a spiral notebook with handwritten notes taken in a biology class. Three headings across the top of the page are isotonic, hypertonic, and hypotonic. Below are diagrams describing the three states as they relate to water content in a cell. The diagrams contain arrows, which would require more description before they would be useful as study notes to a person who is blind and visually impaired. Alexander, these students were spending 2 or 3 hours just to prepare to study. That's before they ever got started. And then often you see them using several pieces of technology to study. So they may be putting notes in their Braille note taker or writing notes in after reviewing things that are in large print on their screens, maybe doing some things audibly. So there is a lot going on for them. They are completely heads down, and they don't always have time to focus on being a kid or being a young person in college and all the experiences that come with that. I think that is a surprise for a lot of them, how much time that they have to put in for that. Narrator. The photo shows a young woman who is visually impaired, again, with her face obscured, sitting at her dorm room desk and reading with the assistance of a screen reader, which enlarges the book pages. Also on her desk are handheld magnifier and a monocular, which she uses in class and while navigating around campus. Alexander. Learning Ally does not want to imply that all students arrive at college with no preparation. We have some wonderful college preparation programs around the country. We really do. But one thing that we saw both in our research and in some follow-up calls that we've made and discussions with students that are blind and visually impaired is even the students that are most prepared and feel that they are completely ready technology-wise and that they are pretty social, outgoing kids, and understand their disability, even those students had a lot of trouble figuring out what success was going to feel like in college, and they never really felt like they got there. Some of our research participants were seniors in college, so we didn't limit this research to freshmen. And one of the most moving interviews was with a young lady who first was describing independence and what it looked like to her. And that independence, the way she described it, called it strategic independence, which I thought was a great term. She said, I have to know when to ask for help and who to ask help from, and when to do things on my own. There is a time for each of those, but in my years at college, she goes on a little bit later to explain that while she was in college, she never felt like she did well. Even as aware as she was of it, she felt like there should have been something better. There should have been some easier way to do this. And this woman is very, very skilled in all of the ways that you would think she needs to be. But I hate that that feeling of success was not there. When you talk about helping students thrive and succeed, they need to feel like they're thriving and succeeding. So that was hard. Pillar number 5 is making technology work for you. So technology is really vital. It's so important that they arrive on campus knowing their technology, having their technology in hand, and knowing how to use it to study or to take notes or whatever they need to use it for. When they are in secondary school, in the K through 12 area, there is money to pay for that sort of thing. There's money to pay for training for that sort of thing. But if they didn't have either good services and training in K through 12, or possibly they lost their vision late enough in that experience that there just wasn't time for them to get that, then once you get to college, the funds for that type of training are probably going to be limited. It depends on their state rehabilitation services and whether or not they pay for training, because most colleges will not. So if they arrive at a school not knowing what technology is going to work for them and what method, they're really going to be at a disadvantage. If, for an instance, this is a student who has lost all his vision and he has not had the opportunity to learn Braille, even though Braille is not found everywhere, no one is going to hand him a Braille book. That's not the point. But a refreshable Braille note taker is very helpful for a student who does read Braille. Narrator. A photo shows a young woman who is blind sitting at a table in the lounge area. Her face has been intentionally obscured. On her laptop, she has opened a document titled Introduction to Political Psychology. She is reading the document with a refreshable Braille display on her Braille note taker. Alexander. So he may have to learn to rely on audio. And if you've never been an audio learner, then that is going to be a big challenge for you in college. It's vital that before you step foot on a college campus or even just for a college visit, you need to know what platforms that your college uses. So if they use one of the student management tools that is not accessible with JAWS or Window Eyes or with whatever screen reader you use, you're going to have a lot of problems. You need to know that going in. And if you recognize a problem with that and you're set on that university, then the student needs to start advocating with the disability services officers right away so that some type of accommodation can be put in place for them. But just having that knowledge up front, that these are the type of systems that my college uses. Narrator, a photograph shows a young man who is blind sitting on a bed in his dorm. On his lap is an open folder that on one side contains tactile graphic waveform. He's reading a page of Braille text that describes a problem set involving the waveform. These are the types of accommodations that would need to be requested and prepared ahead of time the assignment was being given. Alexander, very often the university, even the disabilities office, has no awareness of what makes something accessible. I said earlier that digital does not equal accessible and that they will have the attitude that it does. We've come a long way from, you know, about 20 years ago. Most things were still in print and things had to be scanned and then put either into electronic text or audio. We've really kind of come past that. But the Disability Services Office does not have awareness of that, and they don't see that many blind or visually impaired students, and it's because such low incidence disability, very often either the student or someone who is helping the student needs to educate the Disability Services Office around what is needed. And then we move to the challenges and opportunities aspect of this. In our research, we found that the students who were completely blind felt a lot more comfortable with talking about their disabilities, either with students or faculty, than students who were low vision. I'm not sure why that is. There's a lot of research out there around that. But the students, for instance, there were two young ladies who are low vision in our research, and they have since high school tried to pass as having no vision impairment. So once they got to college, they wanted to pass as having no vision impairment, but it was not possible for them to. One of the young ladies, who is the one who dropped out of college since and is just kind of rethinking how she wants to go back in on this, but that's just really a hard part of it. If you're not willing to talk about who you are and what you learn, then the people that are willing to accept you that way for what you are, because most, I've found out with all my kids that have gone to college, is that college is something that opens people's minds. Any kind of education is going to open your mind, and students are probably at that period when they are most willing to accept somebody else with a difference. But if you're not willing to be a little vulnerable to that, then it's going to be hard for anyone to know, first of all, but to be willing to accept you as the authentic and wonderful person that you are. On the research for college programs, we saw that students need a lot more support, especially during that first year of college, and they need both better prepared before they get there. But then they need the active support, almost 24/7 support of some kind, so that when they need it, it's there for them to find. For more information about Learning Ally and resources they can provide, go to learningally.org. We hope that you've enjoyed today's program and found something in it that can be beneficial to you or someone you know. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. If you have any questions or comments, please call NCRS at 919-832-5138. This program is available as a podcast at our website, www.ncrs.org.